Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Steve Buckley, and welcome again to another show of Open Government Radio, where today's show is for May 25th, 2010, and we're going to be talking with the White House's Office of Science and Technology Policies, Eugene Huang, and he has been involved in the open government effort. If you're following along on the web, you can go to my blog at ustransparency.com, and there's some information there about Mr. Huang and his background. We'll go through it briefly, but and also some other links there that we'll be touching on. If you want to follow along that much better, we can you can go to the blog at ustransparency.com. And anyway, and we will be answering some of the comments that are already there on the blog, and once he goes through those, then we'll turn to take some calls from you. You can call in. The call-in number is 917-388-4210, and that number again is 917-388-4210. 4210. We'll probably be taking calls about halfway through the show. And in case you didn't get that number, it's there on the blog as well. Before we turn to Mr. Huang, I just wanted to point out that there on the under the links that you will see there is the number 7 refers to the Open Government Directive Workshop number 5, which was held at the offices of the U.S. Mint, which is part of the Department of Treasury, yesterday, yesterday afternoon. And if you follow the link there, it was not so much of a workshop as much as a community, Open Government Directive community summit. So don't be thrown by that. It's basically the fifth one that we set up that I've been helping with, that is, since November. And so take a look at that. People will be posting notes from what they got out of the community summit. We may be pointing to some of the things there, but I just wanted to let people know. The next one is not announced yet, but it may be in June or July. We'll see about that. But if you are just listening, it is opengovplaybook.org. That's opengovplaybook.org, and it's a set up like a wiki, so if you want to add anything at all about best practices, you don't have to have attended the workshop or anything else. It's open in that sense, kind of following along with the wiki government approach. So anyway, turning now to Eugene Huang. Are you there, Eugene?
Yes, I am, Steve. It's a real pleasure to be here today.
Well, thank you for taking the time to put out the word about what you're doing with Open Government. A few weeks ago, we had Beth Novak on, and that certainly could have gone on for more than an hour. So we'll try to cram as much as we can into an hour and take some calls, because the main reason for doing this is to provide a way for making it more clear, appropriately enough, what's going on with government transparency, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, as I explain, as it's written down here on the blog, you recently came over from the Federal Communications Commission. Is that mm-hmm. right? I mean, maybe you want to give
right.
us. It's written down there, but if you want to give us a little in your own words about how you ended up where you are now, and
I would be delighted to, Steve.
Go ahead.
I've been in the federal government now for just under 4 years. Started in the federal government at the Treasury Department, and had the opportunity to join the National Broadband Task Force, which was responsible for helping to write the National Broadband Plan. It was a very unique opportunity. I viewed it as almost a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-career type of opportunity to really help provide some intellectual horsepower behind some of the questions regarding broadband and broadband deployment in our country. We assembled an incredible team, and the team that I was responsible for was focused on two broad questions, the questions of how broadband, one, will impact government performance, and two, impact civic engagement. I think one of the really exciting things that we had the opportunity to do while I was on the Broadband Task Force was really to put into practice some of what we're going to be talking about today, how we change the nature of government using open government and embodying the principles of transparency, openness, and collaboration. If you take a look at the National Broadband Plan website, which is at www.broadband.gov, it's clear that we tried out a lot of what I would consider to be very forward-leaning and very new ways of engaging the public when it comes to policymaking. In that context, it was not just a one-way street. It wasn't just the use of Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and other types of technologies to get the word out, but also the use of IdeaScale and other platforms to really engage in a two-way conversation with the public when it came to broadband policy. It was pretty amazing because the number of comments, the amount of input that we received from the public was tremendous. One of the things that excites me about the promise and the potential of broadband is the ability for individuals who are outside of traditional government circles, you know, outside of the traditional Washington types and lobbyist types and others who are normally part of the process, the ability to reach outside of those audiences and get input from people that are in some of the major metropolitan areas in the country, in some of the rural areas of the country, in areas that are being impacted by the policies that are being implemented here in Washington. And go direct to the individuals who are being impacted by these policies and say, look, you have a voice in this too. How are these policies going to impact you, whether it's in, Iowa or New Hampshire or my hometown of Los Angeles, California? For me, the exciting part of transitioning over to the White House is being able to carry on much of what we wrote about in the broadband plan from a perspective of how is open government going to continue to transform government and continue to put that into practice. And we're seeing a lot of very, very amazing and interesting innovation going on in the federal government. I had the pleasure of reading through every single open government plan that was posted online in response to the Open Government Directive. And let me tell you, there's a lot of really interesting things going on in our federal government about how we go about engaging the public, how we go about making sure that we are using new technologies in ways to really transform how government is responsive to citizen input and making sure that we have the best minds, not only the minds in Washington, but the minds throughout our country, engage in some of the really challenging public policy challenges that we face today.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the technology is an enabler. I think from what having been online for about 20 years myself, I got real excited in the beginning when I, you know, quote unquote, discovered the internet. And was working as a federal employee at that time, my work involved public comment on environmental impact statements, and so we were always trying to get our documents out there because it's no fun to work on a document and nobody knows that you did it.
Mm-hmm.
So so once I figured out that there was this vehicle out there for, you know, it was obviously even 20 years ago, you know, the idea that that this would be a tremendous way of getting involving people in the business of government. So that's where the bug bit me, you know, a long time ago, at least the technology bug. But at the same time, I think sometimes we think that technology will just, all we have to do is get the technology into people's hand and then things will just, you know, we'll just have great conversations, you know, and that it'll just naturally happen. But
right. And
has yes, anybody talked with you, or do you get that sense? Or
well, you know, Steve, I'm a technologist at heart, and you know, given my background, I think that your readers could pretty much ascertain that. And you know, in the role that I play in the administration, you know, with Anish Chopra and the incredible team that we have at OSTP, it is our role to promote technology throughout the administration. But I'm a realist too, and recognize that technology is not good enough to be an end in itself. And so when it comes to government and when it comes to thinking about how this fits into the vibrant democracy that our country has had for over 230 years. You know, one of the things that excites me about this is that we really sort of approach this from the perspective there is no wrong door, and so that technology is not necessarily should not necessarily be viewed as a replacement for existing processes, but as a way to add upon existing processes and as a way to make sure that existing processes reach a broader audience. And so when it comes to open government, you sort of think about the disabled community or, as I mentioned, individuals who are not necessarily inside Washington. Open government, broadband, the confluence of the two has tremendous potential in terms of transforming how we think about how government traditionally works within our country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's and right now there's something going on in D.C. I'm not sure if you're going to the Gov 2.0 Expo,
mm-hmm.
which as anybody who's familiar with Gov 2.0 as a term, and all these expos and summits, and last year they had, you know, a whole bunch of them, and so there was all this talk about, you know, the role of technology, but I guess there's a concern for people who are like me, who are a little bit older, who have gone through the technology rush that during the 1990s with eGov, mm-hmm. that this is almost like deja vu all over again, where everybody's so excited about the possibilities that technology can provide, mm-hmm. or can enable, can allow to happen. But then, you know, if people don't know how to run a meeting face to face, then the technology, it's just, you know, you can have more of them, but you still have meetings. If agencies aren't used to having conversations with the public, then technology won't help them be better meeting holders. It'll be easier to hold the meetings, but maybe the meetings won't be improved, you know, in the way they're being run. So it does force the issue, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, and you know, one way also to think about this is that you know, if you take a look at individuals that are just coming out of college or who are in their early to mid 20s, you know, this is a generation of individuals that have almost exclusively grown up online. And so, you know, another way to think about this is that certainly, I am cognizant that there is a population that might not necessarily be either interested or even know how to interact with government online. But there is a generation which is interested in making sure that government services online, and in the role that I play, one of the things that I want to make sure is that government traditionally has this is viewed as being a technology laggard, and to a certain extent that's okay, in that government doesn't necessarily need to be chasing every fad, but when it's clear that there is demand from citizens to provide these types of services online, we should be doing everything that we can to meet that demand.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned your role. Of course, Beth Novick works in your office under Chief Technology Officer Anish Chopra. She's Deputy Chief Technology Officer and for Open Government, and your senior advisor to Anish Chopra, who actually you've been connected. You were his predecessor as Secretary of Technology in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So
that's
kind
right.
That's interesting wrinkle there, I guess. But anyway, what is your role? Are you at large type of facilitator as far as in the open government for people to understand? And then when I say people, I guess it would be mostly the bureaucrats trying to figure out, Beth Novick said this, and then, Eugene Huang says this, and somebody else says this, and you're trying to, and when you're down below, you're trying to figure out, okay, so they said that, and you're trying to make sense of, okay, so who's in charge, or what's the relationship, or something like that? Can you clear that up a little more?
Certainly. And as I said earlier, Steve, we have a tremendous team, a tremendous group of talented individuals. Starting with Anish, starting with Dr. Holdren, actually, John Holdren, who is the director of OSDP, but Anish and Beth and others. Beth and I view this really as a team effort. Obviously, Beth has been involved in this since before day one of the administration. I view myself to a certain extent, and as you correctly pointed out, as a utility player. Open government is not the only issue that's in my portfolio, but is one of the major issues that is in my portfolio. For me, I view no issue as being too small. Throughout my time in government, I've always had an open door policy. Much to the chagrin of my girlfriend and my family, my BlackBerry is on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No issue was too small, and so from that perspective, when it comes to if there are questions about the Open Government Directive, if there are issues related to open government that I have the ability to help either mediate or solve problems, I view myself as being a open door to the federal government, and as a sympathetic ear to the operational challenges as well as the successes that we've had. And so no issue is too small for me. And if any of your listeners or anybody in the open government community writ large has any questions or challenges, I am more than happy to attempt to answer them. And if I don't know the answer to them, to track them down as much as possible.
Well, so now be careful before you get. I'm going to offer you the. So where would if somebody down in the bowels?
Uh-huh.
I shouldn't use that term. I'm a former federal employee, so
yeah.
I'm allowed to use words. Somewhere down the chain of command and in the middle ranks of the bureaucracy, if someone has a question about that, is there a place that they can, is there a group discussion someplace, or should everybody contact you directly, which sounds like it might be a little overwhelming. I don't want to test your, too much. So that's why I say you might want to be careful before you throw out your email address or your phone number or whatever. But it would seem to me that there's lots of places where open government's being discussed, but it's almost like to me that they're too spread out.
Yep.
And even you had mentioned, I know that the White House agencies don't have access to GovLoop, which is just a plethora of open government related conversations, but nonetheless, you don't have access to that. So if somebody were to go there and start talking about open government, I guess you wouldn't be able to do that until you went home or something like that.
Right.
Is there any other places that...
Certainly. GovLoop is, one of the communities that when I'm at home at night, I'll log on to and certainly take a look at the active discussions that are going on there. You mentioned email. We have an open government email box that Beth and I and the team at OSTP monitor on a regular basis. Nothing is too small, and that email address is opengov@ostp.gov. Once again, that's opengov@ostp.gov. If we receive thousands of emails, it's not necessarily something that we can respond to instantaneously. But we've received a lot of inquiries from both the general public as well as government employees, and we do our level best to try to respond to every single one.
Okay. And in case someone's feeling a little reluctant to, raise an issue, I might want to point out that anything you can say that go on the record as far as confidentiality, so that if someone's saying, hey, we're trying to do open gov here, but I'm being shut down or this or that, and they certainly wouldn't want you to share that with their boss or their boss's boss. Do you have a policy of confidentiality so someone can feel comfortable perhaps raising an issue if they sent an email
And certainly if members of the government community, if they would like to submit stuff confidentially, more than happy to put to flag that in the email, and I'll we'll make sure that it is not shared beyond the White House. And if people aren't comfortable with putting that in email, certainly they can reach out to myself or Beth or others through the White House switchboard, and they'll be able to get in touch with us directly.
Okay, and I should throw in, if someone feels even more comfortable contacting me, they can, Steve Buckley, then they can do that too, and I'll try to pass it on, or I will pass it on to whoever that would be. So, but having worked in the federal bureaucracy, I know that any implementation of any new and dangerous and innovative programs, anything that challenges the status quo can be potentially very dangerous to one's federal career. So I think that people need to realize that. And so hopefully these issues can be raised and innovation can take place, and people won't hang back and just wait for it all to blow over, which I think many people, understandably, are looking at the Open Government Directive and so forth and just thinking, well, maybe this is just something to be weathered.
And, it's interesting because, Stephen, one of the questions that is on the webpage is from Lucas Giaffi about sort of the best case and the worst case scenario, I think that many of the federal government employees, myself included, recognize that culture change is hard to do, innovation in government is hard to do for a number of different reasons. But when it comes to what we are seeing in open government, it's clear that what we are trying to do is make sure that we celebrate innovations, change the culture of government, and reap those benefits, whether it's improved policymaking or cost savings or better citizen input, better accessibility. And, you know, it's really interesting because my colleague Beth Novick was in Philadelphia 2 weeks ago speaking at an internal EPA meeting that had been convened on open government. And Beth thought that it was going to be a relatively small meeting, you know, a couple hundred people at best. And when she arrived there, she said she was shocked because it was, you know, over 1,000-plus employees from all of EPA's regions discussing how open government is changing the culture of EPA. And, you know, for both her and myself, you know, things like that are very, very exciting. You know, the flip side of it, you know, Lucas asked, what is some of the worst-case scenarios? Well, I think, Steve, you mentioned them. You know, the worst-case scenarios are that this doesn't really change the culture of government, that it withers on the vine and is viewed as a White House-only priority. And, you know, it's clear that there are a number of steps that we are actively taking to make sure that this is not just a top-down priority, but that this is bottom-up and that we are celebrating the innovations coming from the federal government workforce. And so I earlier mentioned the open government plans, and it is really amazing what was contained in those open government plans because although the White House gave guidance on what should be contained in those plans, we left it as a broad outline rather than very specific, a rather specific detailed checklist of what we thought should go in. And, you know, it was pretty amazing because people came back and took that to heart, that it wasn't just a compliance exercise, but we were really looking for innovation. And so the real challenge in what comes next is how we begin to see implementation. And I know that from Anish Chopra on down and the message that we've shared with the Cabinet, that there is tremendous support for making sure that the open government plans are implemented successfully, that it is a complement to the policymaking work and the operational work that goes on in government agencies every single day. And that our hope is that open government is not just viewed as a White House initiative, but is viewed as a way to improve the work of government employees and how government organizations actually go about their work on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. Well, I'd like to turn to the, if we could maybe take a few questions. There is a question there. I think you were referring to a comment that was on the blog there. There's three comments if people go down to the ustransparency.com for today's show, and they will see that there were three comments that were left there. You had mentioned the one from Lucas Tiafi, who is actually the Open Government Directive workshop organizer, so or the primary one. But there's another one there from Jen Neville, mm-hmm. who I know works for, according to the link there, works for the Western Area Power Administration. Mm-hmm. So she's one of these people, I guess, that are down, you know, outside of Washington, I guess, and working on open government. But she has a question here. She refers to a phone call she was on yesterday. We had an open government directive. For those who couldn't make it to Washington for yesterday's community summit, we had a phone call and she was on that one. But anyway, I pointed to here and she left a comment, which is, how do we show managers the benefit of open government and transparency, mm-hmm. not just the repercussions,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is incentives versus disincentives, I guess.
Right. And Steve, I think that's an excellent question. You know, it's in answering these questions, I go back to the main thrust behind why the Open Government Directive was the first executive action taken by the President, and really understanding that sort of gets to the questions of that Jen has raised. When President Obama made this his first executive action, he was trying to change the culture of government and how government works, and really embracing the philosophy of transparency, openness, and collaboration. In the technology world, there are some things that are very leading edge, and there are some things that are very bleeding edge. And open government is one of those areas which I would consider to be very bleeding edge. There aren't a lot of good metrics, and there aren't a lot of good ways to demonstrate that it's having a real tangible benefit. But on the flip side is that we now have a year and a half of experience with open government, and some ideas that I would love to throw out to Jen and the rest of the open government community and the federal government at large. Certainly, creating metrics are one of the easiest ways to demonstrate value, whether that's demonstrating that the ideas that come in from the outside, from the public at large, generate cost savings, whether they actually lead to improved policymaking, whether, if nothing else, we've actually increased the raw number of individuals who are participating in government processes. Certainly, all of those things are metrics that can be used to demonstrate that open government is working and is changing the nature of how your agency is doing business. Some of the other things are, one of the things that we did pretty well when I was at the FCC at the working on the National Broadband Plan, is to solicit stories from the public at large at how open government has allowed them to participate in any way, shape, or form. We received some pretty amazing input from all over the country, as I mentioned earlier, whether it was places like San Francisco or places like Southside Virginia. It was clear that individuals really wanted and had an interest in participating. And soliciting those types of stories demonstrates that it's clear that this is not just something that is confined to inside the Beltway within Washington, but more broader from throughout the United States. On top of that, we are continuously looking for suggestions from the open government community about how do we make sure that we're measuring best practices correctly and allowing individuals to package the appropriate metrics to demonstrate value. I don't necessarily view myself as having all the answers when it comes to this. Maybe one challenge that I would pose to your listener, Steve, is are there any other good metrics that are out there? Because certainly we have a community of individuals now throughout the federal government who are engaged in open government. OSDP definitely welcomes other suggestions on how best to answer Jen's question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, certainly measurement has been, how do you know if you're making progress if you haven't figured out, what measuring stick you're using?
Sure.
There's a difference between measuring activity in the way of, releasing data sets, for instance, and then the end of pipe, using the engineer's analogy. What pops out at the end if you release all the data in the world, but if the people who are supposed to be using it aren't impressed, then it doesn't matter. that would be the... And I guess there's a problem, with the Paperwork Reduction Act or something, the idea that, to be able to ask, go out and do a survey, in essence, and say, are you being engaged? Is this clear?
Right,
like that.
Right.
That would strike me as the ideal thing. I think there's a danger if 30 different agencies come up with 30 different yardsticks. And so maybe there's a role there, I think, for a leadership role for coming up with a standard measuring stick. That's my little plug there. But anyway, we have some people on the line here. Oh, there was one more comment here, anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds like it's from someone who works at a federal agency. It says here, and this touches on the open government plans, which is where I wanted to go to. What is the official date by which the open government plans need to be updated? My agency was told informally that it would be 45 days from May 1st, and we don't know whether it's going to be another self-assessment and or one by OMB. Mm-hmm. And then they say, in addition, the folks from Open the Government gave us the same time frame for when they would be reevaluating our plan, i.e., mid-June. So I would like some clarification on what the story is. And for those who aren't familiar, well, of course, the Open Government plans came out in April 7th. Then I guess some agencies, including OSTP, within a few weeks came out with another version. I guess OSTP's was 1.2. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened to 1.1. But anyway, and then at the same time, an outside group called OpenTheGovernment.org, who I had a few weeks ago, I had Patrice McDermott on the show, and she was answering some questions about that. But anyway, the OpenTheGovernment.org had some people outside the government evaluate the plans almost at the same time, over that same time period in the weeks after the open government plans came out. So anyway, maybe you can clear up what's going on. Or...
Yep, certainly. It's on the official date. I would actually say that the next official date, as outlined in the open government directive, is actually 2 years from now, when we ask for agencies to publish a new version of their open government plans. We've said all along that we view the open government plans as living documents, and so that in that spirit, we welcome agencies to publish new versions of their open government plans based upon the input that they've received from the public, their employees, stakeholders, others, at any time. OSTP took that to heart, published a new plan at the end of April, not exactly sure if we're going to do another new plan or not, but there are a few nits and nats that we've captured along the way keep our open government plan from actually being perfect. So that's a blunt assessment of OSTP's open government plan. When it comes to sort of next steps and how we view the open government plans, one of the things that we're really focused on is moving beyond focusing on the plans to actual implementation. We could all come up with perfect plans, but when it comes to thinking about open government, I get back to some of the key principles of why we have an open government directive and the hope that this will be changing the nature of how government works in Washington. And the only way that you're going to do that is by getting to implementation. I recognize that Open the Government is doing another assessment, certainly we encourage agencies to do what they feel is necessary to update their plans, especially in light of what Open the Government will be doing. But we recognize that the plans are not the end-all be-all. Certainly OSTP has moved to implementation, and we are encouraging agencies to move to implementation as quickly as possible. And if agencies need any help with implementation, if there's pushback or anything, any other challenges in terms of implementation or operationalizing implementation, I would certainly be happy to assist in the efforts that agencies are currently undertaking to move to the implementation of open government plans.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there's no requirement right now for an agency to redo their plan by
that is correct. That is correct. Obviously, we encourage them to do so. And if agencies decide that they would like to publish a new version of their plans, we certainly would also welcome a updated self-assessment. And part of the reason for this, making sure that this is not just an OMB, you know, an OMB or OSTP compliance exercise, but really an effort that comes from the bottom up, is that we would love to see the agencies own this and own the implementation of these, of these plans, as I mentioned earlier, in the spirit of helping to change how government works vis-a-vis transparency, openness, and collaboration. And so that we feel that the best way to do that is not through top-down edicts, but making sure that this is a bottom-up collaborative approach that is owned by and incorporates the best practices of what agencies are already engaging in.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, it can be, I mean, if here you're on version 1.2 and it's only been a month and a half, so other, you know, there can be this falling behind syndrome. You know, you don't want to be looked upon if your agency said, oh, well, we don't have to update it, but gee, everybody else is on version 1 point whatever, and we're still on 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that implication that you're not keeping up. And so anyway, there's that thing.
I would
say that I noticed that with OSTP, with your agency's update of your plan, that everybody has said, you know, if you have any suggestions, send email to this address and so forth. But there wasn't, as far as I knew, there wasn't any notification that that it would be done within, you know, 30 days or 60 days or something. I think, you know, for instance, EPA has said in their plan that they're going to revisit it in 180 days.
Right.
So at least you have a sense that, oh, okay, I don't really have to do something. You know, there's a deadline there. And I mean, if I had known, for instance, that OSTP or another agency was going to turn around and do it within, you know, a month, then I would have marked my calendar and said, okay, now I'm going to send something in. But I didn't think it would be turned around so quickly. So maybe that would be something that if other, as you encourage agencies to move forward, then I'm just suggesting that they if they put out a due date for comments or something and that they wanted to, you know, come up with their own 1.1 or 1.2, that they give people a heads up, and then they'll probably get some more comments than if they just up and change the plan. So
right.
Just a
right. And, you know, I mean, as I mentioned, we view these as living documents. And so, you know, in certain cases, you know, we had three agencies that were absolute stars, NASA, DOT, and HHS, which really sort of hit it out of the ballpark. And, you know, there's they continue to receive input on their plans, but, you know, in the spirit of making sure that there's a focus on implementation, there really isn't, at least from where I sit, a need for those agencies to revisit their plan, you know, as a compliance exercise. And really and truly, there aren't any agencies that had any real major faults with the plans. I think that what's important to understand is that, you know, as I mentioned at the very top, I had the pleasure of reading through all the plans. And, you know, the amount of diversity in terms of innovation is quite impressive. And so, you know, the yardstick that I now have is trying to take that innovation and saying, okay, are agencies actually in the process of implementing these things? And, you know, my hope is that as we get to the late summer and early autumn, that we'll actually begin to see some very, very exciting things that are being implemented by our federal agencies and our partners in open government.
Okay. Well, let's turn to some phone calls then. And and I'm warning, sometimes people just call in because they'd rather listen on the phone than on their computer.
Mm-hmm.
So if, as I check to see if someone wants to, doesn't want to say anything, they can just keep their mouth shut if they just want to lurk. If they have a question, we have about 15 minutes left in the show, so let's try to, we'll try to keep it to a few minutes each. I've got actually three callers here, so let's, you know, maybe we can keep it to a few minutes. But anyway, we have a phone number ending in zero. Is there a caller there? Just listening. That's okay. And now I'm going to a phone number that I see ends in two. So let's see, is there a caller there who, with a phone number ending in two, that would like to have has a question or comment for Eugene Huang?
That would be me, probably. And I'd like to remain anonymous. Steve?
That's fine.
In one of the earlier blogs on OpenGov, there was a comment made about OMB doing a similar type of evaluation and scoring that Open the Government did. Are there any plans to do that? At one point, Beth said that that might be done soon, sort of towards the end of May, I think. But we haven't heard anything since then. Do you have any more information on that?
I don't have any more information on that, but what I will say is that the Open Government dashboard that we released at the end of April is basically, as it stands, our evaluation of in collaboration with OMB and other White House components of how we believe that agencies did when it came to measuring expectations against the Open Government Directive. To the best of my knowledge, there is not any plans to do anything more fine-grained than what appears on the Open Government dashboard. What I do know is that one of the things that we are committed to doing at some point in the future, and I don't have an exact date on this, but one of the things that Anish Chopra highlighted early on was a series of leading practices. We're trying to highlight areas where we believe that the agencies really excelled and have try to push the envelope when it comes to open government practices. We're in the process of evaluating all the submissions that have been provided to us on leading practices, and it's our hope that we will have an announcement fairly shortly on the agencies that have that will be awarded leading practices awards.
Just quickly, are your leading practice awards the same as the merit badges?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, caller. Merit badges?
Yes. And so we haven't exactly quite figured out how we're going to display this or actually do the awards, but the thinking here is that these merit badges would be a way to for agencies on their Open Government web pages and elsewhere to demonstrate that they have been awarded a leading practice, that they've been recognized by their peers in the Open Government community and the White House for really going above and beyond when it comes to Open Government. As I mentioned, we haven't exactly quite ironed this out yet, but it's an announcement that will be forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't know if you were aware, but back in February, we did talk with one of the vice presidents of 4C Results, which does survey website satisfaction surveys and so forth, which they found to be linked very closely to people's trust in agencies, which, of course, is very close to the idea that, well, you don't get somebody's trust unless you understand what they're up to. So it's all very linked together as far as that goes. So that's that might be a. It sounds. I'm sure that whatever comes forward, hopefully, will be linked to the idea that it's the people, the users out there, who are the ultimate judges of what's clear and transparent, and participatory, and so forth and so on.
Certainly.
Anyway, we have another caller here. Their phone number ends in a 9. Is there a caller there, phone number ending in 9, that has a question or comment for Eugene Huang? Hello? Okay, they apparently just want to listen. That's fine. Well, that's as far as the callers go. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that, or that we, any of the links here that that I had, you know, pre-populated? Of course, I put the link there for your first OSTP plan of 1.0, and then that this is link that would be 8A and 8B on the links that I have under handy links. And then B being the second iteration with a blog post where you and Beth had explained about upgrading to 1.0. So let me ask, how did it go from 1.0 to 1.2? I'm glad you didn't go to 2.0. First of all, because that's abused the idea that there's, you know, versioning, that's why they have decimal points. That's what decimal points are for.
Yeah.
So you can put in 1.1. But anyway, so why did it? How did it? What happened to 1.1?
So 1.1 ended up being an internal working version, and 1.1 ended up circulating internally, and there were some significant revisions on top of 1.1, and so we internally decided that for those purposes we would be. For the purposes of publication, we would bump it up to 1.2, and 1.2 is the public product that the world sees online.
Okay. Well,
the upside is that 1.1 has most of the revisions that are online, but there was some additional revisions. Based upon public feedback and internal feedback, and everything that was in 1.1 ended up making it into 1.2.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that could be explained, I guess, in 1.3 or whatever the next version is, because I was, you know, thinking, well, wait a minute, here within 3 weeks you went to 1.2, and I'm like, so 1.1 was that ever issued like a week later? So.
Yes.
And I understand people are versionally challenged. Like I said, the people went from Gov 1.0 to Gov 2.0, and it's like, what happened in between? So is there anything else that you would like to speak? We've got about 5 minutes left in the show. And I know, and I want to ask you about the idea. Beth had mentioned that there's a community of people who are at the higher level, I guess, that are the ideation community of practice, looking for an ideation, using that term. I don't remember using that term before this year, but the idea of the action of creating ideas, which, of course, you used at the FCC, Idea Scale is a platform that people. I guess you mentioned you used at FCC. It was used by the Open Government, by Beth Novick and those before you came on, I guess. That was what I'm not sure when you got there. But anyway, a lot of the federal agencies were using that as a way to collect ideas from outside the office, from citizens and here and there as far as a suggestion box, I guess you could call it, an online suggestion box. But, of course, there are all these different platforms out there and more than a few, you know, technology companies touting their platform as the best one to use. And I'm sure they're handing out their business cards right now at the Gov 2.0 Expo. But is there, for people who can't make it to Washington to go to the expos and hand out business cards, is there any type of... way for people to gain access or pitch their ideas or, you know, have some, provide some input to this, small group or...
Certainly. And let me talk about the ideation community of practice for a little bit. Sure. Basically,
And we have about 5 minutes, so
yep.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yep, certainly. So the community of practice was initially brought together as a way to exchange best practices. It was a way for the practitioners who are actually doing, the ones that are implementing and designing open government platforms, and in particular, internal ideation platforms, to get together and in an hour and a half, very light agenda, but get to the nuts and bolts of how do you do X, Y, or Z, or what is the best way to try to implement an ideation tool? Do you use vendor A or vendor B? And it was a way for individuals in the community to share ideas. The community right now is restricted to government employees. The goal for this is to be a knowledge-sharing activity rather than an activity where, vendors are invited in and invited to pitch government employees. What I will say is that one of the things that we've attempted to do in the administration to expand the number of tools available to the government IT community is through apps.gov. My colleague Vivek Kundra and his team over at GSA have done an incredible job trying to stand up tools, free tools, other types of tools on apps.gov that the government IT community has the ability to use, including the ideation community. And so if there are vendors that are listening in that would and contractors that would love to present to the community, I would say that one of the best ways is making sure that there are sample types of products available on apps.gov that the community has the ability to test out.
So the idea is to try to get it on apps.gov so the ideation community can try it out, or would they go to the ideation community and or try to get them excited about it so that GSA would say, hey, the ideation community thinks this is kind of cool, so that would help get it on apps.gov.
Right. I would actually say the former rather than the latter. There are really easy ways to get software tools on apps.gov, and the upside to apps.gov is that it serves as a clearinghouse for making sure that the software packages that are on there have pre-cleared government licenses and all the potential headaches and hang-ups related to making sure that something is approved, a piece of software is approved for government use. I would encourage, especially small startups that have the ability to that are not traditionally part of the government contracting world to investigate apps.gov, if they have any questions, certainly there are. There's a contact us button on apps.gov, and the team over there is very, very capable and more than happy to help.
Okay, so point people towards apps.gov then. Okay, good. That's good to know. Okay, well, the lady just told me 90 seconds, so I just want to wrap up here by saying that this has been Steve Buckley with the White House's Office of Science and Technology Policy, OSTP's Eugene Huang, and we've been talking about the open government. Yes, I know. The open government movement initiative by the White House and federal agencies. You can follow along with today's discussion by going to ustransparency.com, and we'll be back next week. I don't have an open spot next week, so if anybody has any suggestions for a guest, feel free to contact me. And I thank you again, Eugene, for taking the time. And perhaps as time goes on and more questions arise about the implementation, you'll come back and answer some more questions and have further discussion on it.
Steve, it's been my pleasure.
Okay. Thanks very much then. And that's all for today. So listen next week. It's on Open Government Radio. Thank you, and goodbye.